Yeah, you know it. The intro song for Eddie Lack joins us every Tuesday here on The People Show. Eddie will be joining us in just a few moments. We've got a lot going on. Poll question up at Sportsnet 650. You can get in on it. Bridge or long term? How would you prefer the Canucks get Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes on their next contracts? You can answer that at Sportsnet 650. Keep getting in on the Dunbar Lumber text line as well. Hey, golfers, get great Vancouver golf for less. Go to discountgolfcard.ca now for your details on how to order your Vancouver discount golf card today. Sats, Ryan and Chimenez says you made a Cleveland Browns fan out of him. Or kind of, but not really. But
yeah, I remember that from Ryan from last season, because he'd hear me rant about the Browns and I'd be all up and down. He's like, what is all this fuss about? So you want to check them out.
It's good to hear that you're growing Cleveland Brown Nation as we speak. Coming up, we'll get back in on your Vancouver Canucks, and we'll do so right now with Eddie Lack, who joins us. Eddie, I know you don't think this already, or you think we are already mortal enemies, but if you're going to be cheering for Sweden on Thursday night, that's going to be a problem for us here on The People Show.
Well, is it a problem, really? I'm going to cheer for the winners.
So you're just bandwagon jumping on whoever wins the game, okay?
Oh my god, I am born in Sweden. You can't call me a bandwagoner when it's the Olympics and Sweden is doing well. That's like calling you a bandwagoner when Italy won the Euros.
That'd probably
you have a better case of saying he's a bandwagoner for Italy because he wasn't born there.
Exactly. I have an even better case. Where is Italy in the women's soccer? I haven't seen it for a while.
They're not playing in the Olympics. But you know what? I'm all for it. Like, Canada is crushing it right now. We got our girl Christine Sinclair leading this team. I know Sweden.
So you switch teams to cheer for whoever's doing best. Okay, got it.
I cheer for Canada and Italy. I don't make any bones about it. Look, Sweden's the favorite. I get that. Cool. That's fine. But I feel like we have to have some kind of a wager. But I'm not doing a one-chip challenge again, Eddie.
And I'm not doing a one-chip challenge either. But what are we going to do?
All right. We'll figure it out. And we'll make sure to make it a topic on
I
for
felt
next
a
week.
Lot more confident in my FIFA game than I feel about this. So
fair enough.
I know anything can happen in one of these matches, right? Like, it's one of those, as much as, yeah, you know, Sweden's favorite, but, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Sweden, too, to be able to pull this off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, most people thought that England would probably beat Italy in the Euro finals as well. So, no, I think it's going to be a real even game, and it's probably going to, like, most likely going to be decided by one goal, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a tight one. Canada's only played tight games so far in this tournament. All right. So you cleared something up for us on Twitter just recently, because I was getting angry that, you know, they were calling carbonara white sauce, and, you know, you're not supposed to put heavy cream in a carbonara sauce. But Nikita Zadorov and his whole thing about Nathan MacKinnon and what an athlete he is, it's most likely Alfredo sauce he's talking about, you know, where the white sauce is most common in dressing rooms for what you guys get to eat.
Yeah. I think it's just like being lost in translation from like Italian to Russian back to English. Like there's definitely a translation issue there. In every locker room that I've been in, there's been the red tomato sauce to put on pasta, and then it's been the Alfredo sauce. And like most guys who are like veterans and smart enough, they just like, they blend the two sauces in, and like that's the key. But it's definitely an Alfredo sauce and not carbonara.
So as far as meals go with teams and pre-game meals, post-game meals, which team had the best meals?
Vancouver, by far. Yeah. I mean, at home, just after practices and games. I mean, we had like steaks and like sushi from Minami, like the salmon Oshi roll there, which I miss.
I couldn't tell.
I'm almost starting like crying now, like just thinking back at it. Like it is my favorite sushi roll in the entire world, and like whenever I'm back, I'm just gonna go and I'm gonna order 5 of the same roll and just sit there and like enjoy myself. But yeah, Vancouver by far took best care of its players.
Which was the worst?
Well, it was really hard going from Vancouver to Carolina. like probably the team that spends most money to the team that spends less. So, yeah, it was hard, but yeah, in Carolina after the games, we used to get pasta that's been sitting there for 3 hours during the game with some sauce, and then we all get to split one pizza. Like it was one pizza. It wasn't like it was like 10 pizzas and everyone got in there, right? It was one pizza, so you got like half a slice each.
That's like the worst. That's like the worst meal. So they basically weren't giving you anything. So Arizona was better. Like Arizona actually did something.
Yeah, but I never played for Arizona.
No, I know, but I know you're around there. Like they're actually better. You think like they're a team that actually you think was giving their players better food than Carolina.
I think Carolina has gotten a lot better in recent years as they got a better team and everything. Like that, right? But when I got there, we were definitely bottom of the league.
Eddie Lack joins us. So in that big blurb, Zadorov says how like Nathan MacKinnon was kind of a jerk to his teammates, MJ kind of way. Like, but it was all like in the name of, you know, having the team perform best. So who was that guy with the Canucks? Like, who was the guy in the room that was a jerk to everybody? If you know, you weren't holding up your end of the bargain or playing well or being bad at practice.
I don't know if anyone was like jerks about the food and everything like he is. I mean, no matter what team I'm on, I'm going to get my Bernays sauce, right? But maybe that's why I'm not in the league anymore, maybe. But no, I would say in like practice and everything, the two guys that sticks out to me that like really held everyone accountable was probably Bieksa and Manny Malhotra was like really good at that too.
Well, and what do you make of the way MacKinnon was? I mean, you saw the excerpt about him yelling at teammates, demanding them to be better. Like, how would you take that as a teammate? Is that acceptable? Just drives everybody to be better, or is that crossing the line?
I think it all depends on the situation and like where you are in your career and everything. I mean, obviously, MacKinnon is a top 5-3 player in the league, right? So I think that he kind of earned the right to do that a little bit, and that's really not my leadership, but I see like how it can work for other people. I mean, Zlatan Ibrahimovic in soccer, it's like the same. He was kind of managing by fear, right? So yeah, I mean, it works. Just look at MJ.
Yeah, it definitely does. Before we let you go, like, are you going to start campaigning for Dougie Hamilton to be a Vancouver Canuck eventually? Because he plays for all your teams.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy? He just, like, follows my path. I mean, he plays a little more minutes and, like, gets paid a little more than I did. But like, yeah, I think that if I was a betting man, which I'm not because ASU won't allow me, but if I was a betting man, I would bet on Dougie Hamilton being a Canuck within 3 to 4 years.
What you should do then, Eddie, is you should come get your realtor license in Vancouver because you'll never make more money than selling a big home to Dougie Hamilton in Vancouver.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing.
Get on it, Eddie. All right. Always appreciate the time. We'll talk next week. Go Canada.
Thank you, guys. Go Sweden. Bye.
Ciao. There is Eddie Lack. He's all in on Sweden for Thursday night against Canada, led by Christine Sinclair. I can't wait for the match. I love the fact that they put the timing of the match at 11 a.m. local in Tokyo solely so because they're like, well, the U.S. is going to be in the finals, so we have to put the match at a time that's going to be like somewhat consumable for the American fan base. So yeah, we're having an 11 a.m. kickoff locally to make sure that happens. Turns out, well, the U.S. isn't going to be there. Too bad. So sad. And we get to watch Canada and the gold medal at 7 p.m. on Thursday night. Love it. Absolutely
prime,
love
prime
it.
Time. Yeah. Prime time gold medal match for Canada. I mean, it's absolutely sensational. Like, we know what we're doing as soon as the show signs off on Thursday. And I'm hyped, man. And, you know, I'm so proud of them to begin with. You're guaranteed a silver medal. So at the Olympics, you know, try to get as many medals as you can. Our women have absolutely crushed it at the Olympics. And here's another case of it. But it would be so sweet for them to bring home that gold. And for Christine Sinclair to take the gold. Like, you know, some would argue the greatest women's soccer player of all time. Some would say greatest soccer player of all time because of all the international goals she's scored and everything that she's done. It would almost be a crime if she doesn't have like a World Cup or a Olympic gold when she finishes her career. And this is the best chance you're going to have to get that.
Yeah, even for just Christine, you know, Karina LeBlanc are on the broadcast essentially crying as Canada won that. It's just so many emotions. This team has gone through so much together, and to beat the Americans in the way that they did, love to see it. And you hope that there isn't a letdown come Thursday. I think they'll be up for it, and I can't wait for that match. I think I just had a new idea for Wrong Answers Only. We're going to do who's the next person to get a big NBA contract, Wrong Answers Only, which would probably still fly given that the way NBA contracts are going. But what's worse than a Carolina post-game meal? Carolina Hurricanes post-game meal. Wrong Answers Only.
Oh. That's a good one. Mitch and Vic is getting in on it already. Yo, those Carolina meals sound worse than a meal for a kid's party at Chuck E. Cheese. Ask Eddie if there was also a creepy animatronic rat present for those dinners. That's Mitch and Vic texting into the Dunbar Lumber text inbox.
Crypto Cow can't believe. What? No tacos? Yeah, can't believe it. They made him parade out there with a taco sign, but no tacos for post-game meals with the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, that must have changed now. I mean, as much as Dundon is cheap and all that sort of stuff, like, you're not probably optimizing player output if you're feeding them, you know, half a slice of pizza and stale pasta that's been sitting there for hours. So, you know, you may want to rethink that.
Man, I can't even imagine that. It's like, hey, here's your post-game meal. It's like the leftover pasta from downstairs somewhere on the concourse. Like, oh, that's awful.
Remember that? Remember that scene from Moneyball?
Where David Justice can't even get a soda out of the vending machine. He's got to pay for it.
Yeah, so he's like, this isn't working. He's like, you got to pay for it. He's like, what? Yeah, you got to actually pay for it. You have to actually pay a buck to get a soda from the vending machine. It's like, yeah, because this is the thing with Vancouver. I know this past year was a mess and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, the team didn't spend as much as they usually do and all that stuff, pandemic related, whatever, right? But they were a team that was at the forefront of stuff like that, the reputation of how they take care of their players, and like Eddie mentioned, right? And yeah, the meal stuff has always still been good here for the Canucks even through all of this, but no, there was a while where they had the reputation of the team that took the best care of its players in the league, right? And I think that's something they want to rebuild here.
Silver and Black Canuck with some insight on the foods the Canucks would be served. What I cooked for the Canucks, we almost always made a tomato sauce with bow tie pasta, farfalle, and vegetables for the players. Maybe a little bit of a cream sauce, but mostly tomato. Ridiculous amounts of Kobe beef sliders that Roberto Luongo was absolutely obsessed with. And then he says, Eddie, we definitely did not spend a lot on the food we served you.
I guess it was a sushi then and stuff like that they bring in.
Yeah.
That maybe cost a bit more, but that's pretty funny.
The way Eddie was talking about that sushi, it was like something out of a romance novel. I couldn't really believe it. So it is the People Show every Tuesday. Eddie Lack joins us. We'll get back in on the Canucks in just a bit, but did want to talk a little bit more about the NBA and the wild offseason that's going on with the NBA right now. So much player movement, so many large contracts. You know, like the one that really stuck out for me, Sat, was Chris Paul. And, you know, I know he was coming off an incredible year with Phoenix, and he's done a lot of things to really, you know, find his game again and change his diet, all the whole thing that you hear players getting up there in age and really fine-tuning their diets and their routines to really make the most of what they have left in the tank. But I thought Chris Paul's last contract was a lot, and here he is getting another four-year deal at $120 million for the total value, and his total career earnings by the end of this contract will be well over $400 million total. I mean, that's the one contract that kind of got me and was just like, man, NBA is just insane at how these guys are getting paid right now.
Funny money, right? Like, I mean, that's where the NBA is at. And the revenue streams are so much greater. There's so much more money that comes in for the NBA. That's why they're able to do all this sort of stuff. But something you alluded to earlier on, too, when we were talking about the salary cap in the NHL and how you wished, you know, there was more ways to exceed the salary cap. Well, you can in the NBA, right? Like, there's a hard cap, then there's a luxury tax, and there are ways you can get over the cap and be creative. You see a lot of sign-in trades in the NBA. You have the mid-level exception and stuff like that where you can exceed the cap and sign players. Like, what they do is give you ways to, yeah, you have big contracts that are big risks, but there are ways out of them. None of them are longer than 4 years. You have other ways to add talent to your team. So even if you are cash-strapped and capped out, there are avenues for you to do things and tinker with your roster, which leads to a ton of player movement like you saw. It's a lot of money for Chris Paul, but with the way the cap works and what he means to that organization, $30 million actually makes sense. Believe it or not, he's actually taking a pay cut per year on his new contract. That's how much he was making before. And he's making $30 million per year now on average.
I know. It's madness, really. And you know what? I mean, hey, if he keeps playing the way that he did last year, Phoenix is going to be totally fine with it. And you wouldn't want to break up that team that just went to the final. And Paul was such a big part of it alongside Ayton and, of course, Booker as well. But, you know, you mentioned the salary cap and, you know, even the Lowry deal, sign and trade with Miami. It's so that they can exceed the cap, right? They get his bird rights. And there's all these different things that, you know, I don't fully understand. Certainly, not that I don't understand, but, you know, I don't have the depth of knowledge needed to explain them, nor do you really want to hear it probably. So I just love that, you know, if you're in a contending window or you feel like you are close, you have ways that you can spend extra. And that's the one thing I wish the NHL had. Because, you know, even if you are an Arizona or name any small market team in the NHL, and you feel like, you know, most years you're going to spend somewhere around the floor, but when you go through a rebuild and you're at the peak of those moments and you're like, we have a really good team, we can push this year, we have ways to do it, you can. And you know, that's the one thing I wish the NHL had that it obviously doesn't and probably will never implement around their salary cap. I wish it wasn't as strict. And there isn't that sort of situation. But I think it leads to a lot more intrigue in an off season, and you see it every year. It comes around. The NHL does their thing, and all of their headlines get blown out the water by what's happening in the NBA.
Well, you're absolutely right, but the reality too is the NHL is just structured so differently because of the revenue streams, right? And here's the funny thing: we always talk about the salary cap and how we wish it was, you know, more flexible. And it's true; I wish the same thing. But they're already applying artificial. They had been applying artificial inflators every single year to increase the salary cap, and players are paying into escrow because essentially teams were spending money they didn't have because of the revenue sharing agreement, right? So based on the way the salary cap works, even at the time when you saw the eight, even now because of the agreement they have, the league is bringing in less money than they're giving out to players, and they have to pay that back through escrow. So the league is a bit of a house of cards when it comes to its salary cap. And that's why, especially now in a pandemic, you see how it's gotten flat and it's not moving off to 81.5. Because even in the past, they were inflating the salary cap every single year to make it bigger than it was. And that's the main reason why NHL owners don't want to have other mechanisms that lead to more money out of the system, because there's already a ton of money out of the system. And reality is the NHL is never going to get to the point the NBA is at unless their revenues grow exponentially.
It is the people's show. We've got lots more still to come. We will get in on the poll question and wrap that up. But did mention this wrong answers only earlier. But wrong answers only. Who is getting a massive NBA deal? Because everybody's getting a massive NBA deal. I mean, I can't even believe the Raptors let go of Kyle Lowry, then they signed Gary Trent to $54 million. Like, what is, like, okay, I get he's talented, but, like, I don't know. I feel like he hasn't done a lot to earn a $54 million contract already. And then there's Norman Powell, who I like, was kind of a fan favorite for the Raptors, too. $90 million? Really? Norman Powell? The same Norm? But he got it with the Portland Trailblazers. It's wild. So wrong answers only. Who is getting a massive NBA contract? Let us know on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll get to some of those texts. Have some fun in the final segment of the show. It is Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Sports at 650. Final segment of the People's Show, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Already some wrong answers only coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line, Sat. Who will get a massive NBA contract? Wrong answers only.
Vicky's husband says Big Country Reeves.
Vincent, the Monstars will get a massive NBA contract. Gotta say, I haven't watched LeBron's Space Jam yet. Have you?
No, I have not. I've decided to save my money, and once it comes out on one of the many platforms which I subscribe to, I will watch it then, because I'm already paying money to watch something, so I don't need to pay more to watch a movie that's probably not going to be all that great. I'm not in a rush to see it. But maybe a Bill Murray as well, who was originally in the first Space Jam, maybe he's going to get a big NBA contract.
Ooh, yeah, that's good shout. Now, I was thinking Jackie Moon along those same lines, you know?
Yes.
Semi-pro, Will Ferrell's character. You could go in a lot of different directions with that.
I got one more.
Okay, let's hear it.
Tucker Poolman. And that's why the Canucks had to pay him a 4-year deal, $2.5 million. He had the NBA calling.
I mean, he's got the heft, right? He's 6'2". That's like what, point guard height?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much in the NBA. All right, keep those texts coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Interesting from today. John Tortorella, or Tortorella, signed a deal with ESPN to be one of their analysts. Now, I guess I should have seen this coming, because I don't think that there was a job immediately at the ready for Torts to take. And not to say that he won't get back in the NHL in a head coaching spot, but, you know, it's... there's only so many jobs that open up every so often, and Torts may not be getting a job right out of finishing up with the Columbus Blue Jackets. But I do have some thoughts on Torts, you know, just walking into a big-time job with ESPN as they get the rights back. And I get it from their perspective. You know, he's a guy that everybody knows. He's been around the NHL for a long time in big markets, has had a lot of blow-ups, has won a cup. You know, like, he's coached the U.S. At the World Cup. You know, like, Torts has been around for a long time, and you want somebody recognizable and a big name that you can sell to a new audience. But, like, just given Torts as many dust-ups with the media, like, I don't know how I feel about him being like, okay, yeah, I'll take this massive paycheck from ESPN after I've just cursed out the media my entire career.
Well, part of it, too, is does it not help the media when he goes off to, like, don't we love the sound bites he gives? Like I get what you're saying, right? And
I'm more,
I've like, ranted about him before.
No,
I get
it's more about the non-sound bites, you know? Like, when he's just, like,
okay,
after
okay.
a game, he's just like, yeah. I don't know. We didn't play good. Nope, we didn't play good. Nope, we didn't play good. You know, like, I love the dust-ups with Brooksy and everything that happened there. And, oh, my God, who didn't love what happened here in Vancouver with Bob Hartley?
Well,
like, everybody outside the league, that was pretty hilarious and great content for a while there. I know for Canucks fans, it's probably still an eyesore. But like, content-wise, you know, those things were good. But... I'm talking more about recent memory when he's like, I'm not going to go off anymore. I'm just going to, like, shut up and not give you anything.
Yeah. Well, I get it, right? And the thing with Torch, too, is I think that sometimes he gets romanticized by the media as well because he gives such good sound clips. It's like, oh, because he gives us good, great clips, it's okay. It's just Torts being Torts. But I do think he's a guy who wears out his welcome after a while someplace, right? And he can be a hypocrite, right? And I remember when he came to Vancouver, his heart really wasn't in it. His head really wasn't in it. And I remember at the time I likened him to a snake oil salesman because he said all the right things. He was, you know, all gung-ho at the start. And he was talking the big game. And then he didn't deliver. Not from the way he coached the team, not the way he put the work in. And it's like, well, you talk all about, you know, about how you expect all these great things from athletes and dedication, all this sort of stuff, and you're so fiery and demanding the media to ask you the right questions, yet you're half-assing it at work at the NHL. So, you know, what's going on here? And I do think there's a level of that to Torts, so I can get what you're saying. But he's great for the media. People love hearing Torts talk. And he's a personality that has kind of made himself seem bigger than the game, and it's really perfect for the media. You can't bypass the opportunity to offer him a good job if you're a big media company. Like, if you're ESPN, like, you just can't bypass the opportunity.
Well, you know, I'll say this, because I've seen, and I've been around long enough to see ex-players come into a media job, and some of them take it really seriously and they want to be great at it and they want to work at it and they want to get good, you know, and be able to deliver a message and deliver the analysis and be proud of what they're doing. And I've seen other guys that just, you know, quite frankly, think they can just flip on a microphone and say whatever and not really take it all that seriously and just, you know, come in, watch the game, give their analysis, and then they're gone. And they don't put any extra work in. They don't work on their craft at all. And they just essentially are collecting a paycheck. And look, I don't know this personally with Torts, but, you know, given how he's treated media through his career on a lot of occasions, and certainly not everyone but has had this experience with Torts, but some have, where he has disrespected the media to a certain level or not respected their jobs. And I feel that way when, you know, he does give non-answers to a room waiting for him to give his thoughts on a game that he just coached, a tough loss for his Columbus Blue Jackets in a playoff game, whatever it was. And he's just there being like, nah, not going to say anything. Sorry, not going to do anything today. Essentially being Marshawn Lynch. I'm just here so I won't get fined. Like, when you show that level of disrespect to other people doing their jobs, how are you going to go into that job and then, you know, give it the full respect it deserves? Because there's a lot of people that are probably deserving some new voices that, you know, could definitely get heard. And we're always saying how we want to be more diverse in the hockey world. And to just lay it up with John Tortorella again, you know, that's the kind of thing that bugs me a little bit on that front.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. There are lots of media that ask bad questions, right? And they try to trap you and they do certain things. And,
oh, 100%,
you know,
yeah.
Right? So I don't think you have to, like, respect the media all the time and whatever and all that sort of stuff, right? Like, I don't necessarily buy into all that. Like, I just think it's one of those funny things with Torts, and I think he's going to be great. I think Torts is going to be awesome on TV. He gives great perspective. He's super entertaining, but he's a hypocrite at times. Like, that's how Torts can be. But I don't really begrudge him for taking the job. Like, I really don't. Like, it's a smart thing to do, and they're offering him good money on a good platform. And every time he's done it, it's allowed him to get back into coaching afterwards.
It is the People's Show. Let's go to the people on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Gurjeet, didn't you guys do the same thing with Brian Burke? Didn't he even try to get media members fired so he could be considered worse than Torts? I don't know if I would agree with that. Everything that I've heard about Berkey, especially when he was working with Hockey Night in Canada, was he gave the job a ton of work. And I think you saw it in him, how much better he got over time. As far as how he was while he was in the game, I mean, look, he gave a lot of guys good quotes, great stories, and everything else. He knew how to play the media as well. I think, I don't know if I buy that with Berkey, that,
well,
He wasn't always the best to media, but some people think he was fair. Some people think he wasn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on your experience. But, like, there are people that didn't have good experiences with him. Like, he said a lot. Yeah. Like, I remember about Tony Gallagher. Like, he was referred to him as scumbags and maggots and stuff like that, right? I mean, like, he you know, and there were a lot of people that he clashed with. So, I mean, a lot of public things that he did. So, I get the point. I mean, Berkey was also kind of similar. Now Torts is different. They're different in that way, but they're both people that were very fiery with media, were not afraid to call them out and have confrontations and clashes with them, and then find themselves on the other side of the fence afterwards. Like, that does happen a lot. Like, it's not a new trend or anything.
More coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. You're painting Torts with the coaching brush unfair because this is a different job that he is very well qualified for in terms of his experience, in my opinion. I'd rather listen to a knowledgeable hockey mind than you jokers. Oh, great text.
I like it. Fire.
And yet you're listening and responding. Thank you for that.
Fantastic. And he's done it before. Like, we Torts has been a broadcaster before. So that's what we're referring to.
Yes, he definitely has. All right. Final thing before – well, a couple of things before we go. Peter in Vancouver texting in. Not sure if you guys have touched on this, but Andre DeGrasse qualified for the 200-meter final with the fastest time. Aaron Brown with the third fastest time. Should be a great final. That's Peter in Vancouver. DeGrasse will be racing. Aaron Brown as well, fighting for Canada in the 200-meter final tomorrow at 5:55 a.m. Pacific time, of course, on CBC. And DeGrasse, I think, you know, after what happened in 2016, we all had massive expectations, right? You know, he's there, he's neck and neck with Usain Bolt, and they had the little bromance going on. And, you know, I think after that Olympics, you know, our main takeaway was, oh, DeGrasse is just going to own the next Olympics, right? He's going to be the guy next time around. And, you know, he finishes in a bronze, and things haven't gone, you know, according to that plan from 2016 to here. And I think tomorrow's a big moment for him, because after the race that he ran in the semifinal and the number he put up, the best time of anybody at these games so far in the 200 meter and the best of anybody since 2019, all of a sudden, you know, DeGrasse is now a gold medal hopeful going into tomorrow. It's a really interesting spot we find him in. And I really find the story around DeGrasse to be fascinating, how, you know, we viewed him as this great next sprinter for Canada and the next guy to win a gold after Donovan Bailey. And it hasn't gone as smoothly as we all expected and probably shouldn't have expected.
it's a tough sport, right? And as far as injuries, staying healthy and getting that peak performance all the time, it's a really challenging sport in that sense. Like the way these guys' bodies are built, and the grass is different, right? You have these guys who are just absolute powerhouses. They're built like loads of muscle. That's not really the way he's built, right? He's more lean, but he's super fast, right? And, you know, that's kind of where he gets it from. But, you know, the thing is, he's really good at the 200 meters. Like even going back to the Rio games, he got a silver in the 200 meters, right? So that's kind of where he excels. He got a bronze the same way he did back in 2016 at the 100-meter event, and he could get the gold here. And Penny is the greatest Olympian we've had, but as far as following Donovan Bailey's footsteps, and I know the 100 meters is still kind of considered the fastest man on the planet, the real prestigious of the two, like even the extra so of the two, but like you're right behind Donovan Bailey as far as the greatest runner in this country's history if you're able to pull off a gold in the 200 meters.
One thing about DeGrasse that I absolutely love, like we love clutch performers and all of that. He's been to 6 individual event finals on the world stage at the Olympics or the World Championships and has gotten a medal in all of those 6. I mean, this might be his best opportunity yet to land gold, and that's a big spot for him to be in. If he gets a medal tomorrow in this and then another one, he'll have another medal chance of the 4x100 relay. You know, he'll be up to 6 for his career should that happen. And right there with Penny, just kind of feels like a golden age of Canadian athlete that we're in right now, Sat.
It absolutely does. And, you know, we've seen the investment in Canadian athletes change in a big way, right? And we saw it leading up to the 2010 games, and we've seen that continue and grow even more ever since then. And we're seeing our athletes excel in a massive, massive way because of it. We all know how much potential there is in this country, how many great athletes there are in this country. It is exhibited by how many great hockey players we had for such a long time, and that was really our bread and butter. But as, you know, things started to change and, you know, there is more advancements and more opportunities in other sports, we see a lot of those athletes that maybe wouldn't be able to make it in hockey but were great athletes be able to excel in other sports because those avenues are available to them. And now they're also well-funded. And when you have that type of setup, you are able to get the best out of your people, the best out of your athletes. And that's where we're at. Like there's a really interesting thing going on now across every single sport when it comes to Canadian athletes. We look at the NBA, right? And how many NBA... Like the country with the most athletes is the U.S. and the NBA, and then it is Canada. They're number 2. That's how many good basketball players we have. We see how many great baseball players there are. We see it coming through in football as well. We're seeing it also in these Olympic sports. In the Winter Games, it's absolutely dominance. And now here in the Summer Games, especially in the women's side, it is absolutely spectacular. But Andre DeGrasse, well, he's putting a case together to be one of the greatest Olympians in Canadian history, and a guy who wins 6 or 7, 8 or 9 medals through his career. If he does that reach, well, then you start going down as one of the greatest Olympians when it comes to the events you've been in.
Yeah, it's the anticipation is drawing near. And 5:55 tomorrow morning, Pacific time, Andre DeGrasse will be racing in the 200-meter final, has had the best time at the Tokyo Games to this point through the qualifiers. And Aaron Brown also won his semifinal with a time of 19.99. He's a bit more of a long shot for a medal in the event, but is in the final alongside Andre DeGrasse. Brooke Henderson is actually getting her Olympics started tonight as well, as we continue talking about those golden generation athletes. And while she's world number 7, Brooke Henderson, and teeing off round 1 for the women's golf event, just started, but her round will begin around 7:30 Pacific time. So something for you to watch there. It was kind of fun watching Jose Bautista with a walk-off earlier as well. I was kind of like, wow, Jose Bautista still playing, and he's actually in the Olympics for the Dominicans. It's funny, like, what you watch when the Olympics come on.
Yeah. It's unreal. You just see the most random. You're like, wait, this guy's like, I saw Paul Gasol yesterday for Spain. He's like 41 years old playing against the U.S.
Pau still got it. That's amazing. I've been watching so much. I was telling Randeep last week, over the weekend, I became a trampoline specialist as I happened to drop in on Rosie McLennan going for a third straight gold. Still think she got jobbed by the judges.
Oh, dude, I'm so with you, right? You got in on that. Like yesterday, I can't believe how into the 400 meter hurdle I was yesterday. You see that Carsten Warholm dude, the Norwegian? He crushed the world record and he like ripped his shirt off almost. Like, dude, what he did though, like I'm not a hurdles expert at all, but just like you mentioned, like all of a sudden getting into it, I started getting really interested in the hurdles. And as the announcer was saying, that field was one of the greatest, most loaded 400 meter hurdles fields in history. Like they were going through it before the final started, and true to their word, Carsten Warholm beat his own record by a second, which is like insane. It was under 46 seconds. The guy who finished second, the American, he also smashed the previous world record, but he finished his second, and like seven records were set across the field for best in their country, area records, national records. It was insane. I couldn't believe how into that race I was and how I was deep diving it afterwards.
I just couldn't get enough of the runner from Haiti that did an immediate face plant on the first hurdle. Like if I were to run a hurdle race, like that's how it would end up for me, you know?
Yeah. You wouldn't even be, you'd run into it, Reach. Come on.
I'd just go under it. Like, you know,
just dip under.
What other choice would I have? You know, like I'm not jumping over this thing. I mean, I may have great legs, but I don't know. I don't like the jumping height just ain't there for me.
The vertical might be a bit difficult.
The vertical is definitely difficult. I'm glad some of you came around on water polo and just how violent it actually is. You know,
dude, that's a tough sport. That's a tough sport.
It's absolutely brutal. I was kind of. Disappointed in our beach volleyball. I've been watching a lot of beach volleyball. We had two Canadian women's teams going into the quarters. Both had a chance at getting into the semis, obviously. Both came up short. That was a little bit disappointing, but I'm super fired up for DeGrasse tomorrow. And then, of course, the women against Sweden on Thursday. Just living and dying with that team in 2012. Seeing a lot of those players still around, you know, like a Desiree Scott kind of doesn't get thought of as somebody who was there in 2012 and is still around now alongside Christine Sinclair. I think we've just been invested in that team for so long, right? Since 2012 and everything that happened there, like we've been so invested in them for this time with Cincy going and leading this team that this feels like a culmination moment, you know? And we know how much they've put in and how much pride they've shown in the badge and in the flag. And that's one of the reasons I've been so invested with them is just how they've fought for everything with this Canadian side for so many years.
And they've been the only thing as far as soccer in Canada was for a very long time that we could hold pride in.
Yeah.
Like what else were you holding pride in, right? There was nothing else. The men's side has been an absolute joke. Now it's finally turning around and it has us excited and it has us captivated. And all of a sudden, Reach, it's becoming a pretty amazing golden generation, isn't it? We look at the Olympic athletes, winter and summer games. We mentioned basketball. We see the women, see what they do here. They're getting a silver at the very least at the Olympics. And if the men qualify for Olympics and the basketball side, we see the men start getting going and make the Olympics and be contenders, maybe the next decade we could finally really see the fruits of this golden generation at the highest levels.
It's such a golden generation for Canadian soccer. And it started all with the women in 2012, and here we are now. And it's only going to continue. It's only getting better. Can't wait for it. Thursday night. Glad you tuned in with us. Always appreciate you giving us your time on your drive home or wherever you may be listening from. You can always get everything on podcast. Subscribe and leave a review. We do appreciate it here on The People's Show. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah, producers Joel Gaudette and Cam Barra. Back tomorrow, 3 o'clock on Sportsnet 650.